All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to season 3 of Our Friend the Computer. And I'm just jumping in to say that because we have our friends over at Media Archaeology Lab, they have been so sweet and kind to supply us with some ringtones from their archive Nokia collection, which will function as kind of transitions throughout this episode. So thank you to Daria Medic for recording and mixing these fun little nostalgic nuggets of audio. Thank you.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited too.
I'm Camila.
I'm Anna.
Yeah, this season we're going to look at the world of cell phones or mobile phones, depending on where you are. I had to, like, because I'm from Australia and I live in the States, I had to really change the way that I talk about things, and cell phones and mobile phones was, I grew up saying mobile phones and here everyone says cell
phones. Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what I say. I think I say cell phones.
What do they say in the UK?
Mobile phones.
Mobile.
Yeah, I think cell phone is kind of an American thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I guess this is something that we'll find out throughout this season. I did the research for this first episode and have been learning a lot about GSM networks and 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G, all of that stuff.
We'll get into it.
But I think we're going to be focusing, as is our wont, on like 80s, 90s, early 2000s cell phone development around the world, probably pre-smartphone, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But before we start, we do have two fun news items that have occurred while we've been on our little break. So firstly, I, Camila, will be representing Our Friend the Computer as a member of New Inc., which is an art, design and technology incubator based here in New York, connected to the New Museum. I'm like thrilled that we're doing this.
Yeah.
And we're going to be developing over the next year not only this podcast that you're listening to now, but also Our Friend the Computer as something of a creative studio to work on additional multimedia and audio projects and research around alternative histories of technology.
Hell yeah, we're expanding.
And to help support this expansion, our second bit of news is that we've started a Patreon. And we're going to be posting additional content from our podcast recordings, fun bits from our research, snippets of our lives, and you can even have a say in deciding future episode topics. And we've named the tiers. We had a whole meeting about this. We named the tiers after, I guess, fruits and nuts, mm-hmm. fruit and nut computers.
Yeah.
So we have acorn, blackberry, apricot, tangerine, and apple. But every tier of support will have access to the same content and this podcast will stay free. And we're just very grateful for however you choose to be here with us in this information superhighway of a world. And we're really grateful and thank you all for so much for your support over the last year and a half of Our Friend the Computer. And we're really excited about where we're going to go next. So come join us over on our Patreon, or also over on our Instagram and our Twitter, where I've been posting memes, computer memes.
Yeah, the memes will not be paywalled. But yeah, I mean, just to clarify as well, those tiers are basically like pay what you can tiers. So like Camila said, they will have the same content, but it will just be you decide how much you want to spend on this extra stuff. And some of it will also be videoed content.
Our faces.
Yeah. And
not
other
just our
fun surprises.
Okay. All right. We're through the news, and this is a chunky episode. So let's get started.
Yeah.
Cell phones. This was actually a listener suggestion, specifically pre-smartphone cell phones in Japan, which we are going to get to, but we're actually going to start the season in Finland. I've never been to Finland. Have you been to Finland?
No, I was meant to go to Finland once when I was going to do a master's in Finland to do human-computer interaction, and then that fell through because I got a London job. And oh, damn. All right.
I know. I've regretted the decision ever since.
I think Finland is missing out on you.
I'm missing out.
Well, maybe today can help you with a bit of Finnish culture. So we're going to start in Finland, specifically in a little town called Nokia on the banks of the Nokianvirta River. Okay, firstly, did we realize that Nokia was a town? I think I presumed it was like an ancient Greek word or something.
Yeah, no, I had absolutely no idea. I have, and especially the river, Nokianvirta River, is such a fun little quirk. Maybe I'll start using Nokianvirta River phone.
Nokianvirta phone. And secondly, pronunciation. I say Nokia. I think Americans say Nokia.
Yeah.
Nokia. I don't know.
I say Nokia, but I'm gonna say Nokia from now on.
Oh. Okay. Well, I guess I'm saying it from how Australians pronounce it, which is probably how British people pronounce it. But I did find like a TV ad. I think it's Italian, and they said Nokia. So I'm just gonna go with it. I apologize if that's hurting anyone's ears as I go through this. All right. So Nokianvirta River is important here because Nokia is known as a town with lots of waterways. And because of this, they're also known for their hydro-powered pulp mill and paper making, which started around like the 1860s. And then over the following century, this expanded into a lot of different areas like rubber manufacturing, electricity stuff, military things through to computer technology in the 70s. And this was all sort of under this one company of Nokia. And then later some of the subsidiaries sort of split off and were sold. And I like that a lot of them seem to sort of rename from Nokia, like Nokia tires, to Nokian tires, Nokian footwear, I guess because it's like from the town rather than of the company. And Nokia, the company itself now, doesn't maintain a base or connection to the town and hasn't for a long time. But I think the town is still very like into the fact that Nokia is from there. And it does seem like there's a Nokia mansion that sometimes the company goes and like does events. They hire it for events or something. Okay. But it does seem like a very cute town. I was looking at pictures and the waterways are very pretty.
It's so interesting to see because I guess a lot of original, you know, technology manufacturers would have had some kind of inherited industry from the Industrial Revolution where manufacturer would just like progress and evolve. But to actually see that manifest in the name itself is really fun. Like Nokia is literally the name of like an industrial town.
Yeah. So that's really cool. So in 1979, Nokia joined with a Scandinavian TV manufacturer called Solora.
Are they still a tire manufacturer?
Around this time, they're starting to sell off some of their other like non-technology subsidiaries. I'm not sure exactly when that happened, but it is around this time. So as they're kind of selling some things off, they're acquiring other things. So around this time, they create this partnership with Solora, and together they make what will later become the telephone, cell phone subsidiary of Nokia, and it's called Mobira. Some places were calling it Mobira. Feels like a Mobira to me. Looks like Mobira. So through this venture, through Mobira, they ended up developing the Nordic Mobile Telephone Network, the NMT. And it was launched across 1981 and 1982. And it was actually the world's first international cellular network because it linked the Nordic countries of Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and Finland. And then later, sort of many countries in Eastern Europe. It was also the first cell network that allowed for international roaming. I don't know if that's the same as when they say it's the world's first international cellular network, but it sounds cool. So this network was based on analog 1G technology. The preceding technology was 0G, which I think sounds kind of badass. It's like zero gravity, but it's just like zero generation. It's like the nothing generation.
Yeah, I don't think it was even a generation right?
Is like, that just what we call it now because we had to give
it? Yeah, it was just some portable phones connected to a centralized operator that became available after World War II.
Hmm. I guess we're just like retroactively grouping it together. Yeah. So these were ARP ARP networks, which were radio frequency based. And NMT phones were originally used for truck communication, and they were sometimes integrated into the truck design itself. So I think to talk about cell phones, we really need to talk about car phones.
Yeah, I see. So the tire company thing makes sense here a little bit, because the phone was like an addition to the progression of technologies of the car.
Yeah, I think also maybe military, and they were working with like battery stuff as well. Yeah. So I think that like electricity, military, rubber all comes together.
Yeah.
In this like truck thing.
Yeah. So the technology was kind of meant to like, yeah, progress those industries.
Mm-hmm. But the way that it ended up progressing was like towards mobile phones for the everyday person. The first phone that Nokia Mobira launched on the NMT network in 1982 was a car phone. It was the Mobira Senator.
Okay, this also makes sense, because the difference between 2G and 1G as well is that 2G was entirely digital and 1G was analog, which meant that it was connected through radio. So if cars already had radios, yeah, this really works, like you said earlier.
Yeah, I think like the whole NMT network was 1G, was analog. And then later it kind of gets taken over by digital,
yeah,
2G. Cellular networks. Yeah, but yeah, you're right. You can see how it progresses quite clearly through these phones. So this phone was called the Mobira Senator, which I love that name. It's like so... fancy. And I also like to say the senator weighed 10 kilograms or 22 pounds, which is quite heavy, but not very heavy for a senator. And it was somewhat portable. Like it was a box. It was a big box. And it was, you know, very heavy, but like technically you could move it in and out of the car, but it's like no one's doing that. And so it was like a big box that you could carry, and it had a handset and a big antenna. And I think a lot of the weight was actually the battery component, which I guess got smaller and lighter over time as we moved into like lithium ion battery world. And car phones were actually more popular than cell phones in the 80s, largely, I think, because of this weight factor, that it made a lot more sense for a sort of portable phone to kind of live inside a car rather than something that you would carry around with you. The transition from car phone to cell phone, as far as I can tell, was really about weight. And this transitional object for Nokia was the 1984 Mobira Talkman. It was half the weight of the Senator, 5 kilograms, and was marketed as a transportable phone. So you could move it in and out of your car a little more easily. And it still had the same style. So it was like a phone headset attached to a box with an antenna. And it also had the capacity to store 184 contacts in its phone book.
Wow, maybe I'll get one. Oh, wait, no, there's one on eBay selling for $245. I think I'll just stick to my other overpriced cell phone.
That's still cheaper than an iPhone.
Yeah, that's true.
So while the original car phones were used for trucking, with the Senator and the Talkman, we're now firmly entering this like 80s business yuppie culture.
Yeah, this is also just so funny to me, because now you'd be fine or even possibly sent to jail for using, you know, a phone and a car. But I guess that fining was more introduced when cell phones got too portable and kind of abstracted from the vehicle and the dashboard. And actually, like, were these car phones in any way built into the dashboard, or would they just be placed on the seat next to you or something?
I think the idea was that they were placed on the seat next to you, but it seems like some had kind of like a dock or something that you could kind of put some of it in, but I can't tell. It's sort of hard to tell with these. There's a lot of like mislabeling between like the senator and the talkman and some other ones, but yeah. Also, maybe when like more rules around seatbelts and stuff came in.
Yeah.
The TV adverts for the talkman are really indicative of this like yuppie business thing. For the talkman, I watched one where there's like two young businessmen and they're heading to work in their cars and they get stuck in traffic. And one guy is just like easily making a chill phone call to the office with his Mobura talkman. And the other one has to, like, when they're stuck in traffic, jump out of the car to try and get to a public payphone. But then he only has cash, so he can't like make the call. And as the talkman phone guy drives past in the traffic, the payphone guy sort of runs up to his window and asks him for change, and the talkman guy just like laughs and drives off. And then the payphone guy gets really, really frustrated and starts like grabbing his hair and pulling his tie and kicking at the air. And then it just cuts to an image of the Mobura talkman over a beautiful sunset with like the Golden Gate Bridge in the background.
Wow, the simplicity of advertising back then. That's so
it's
mean.
It's really 80s. Yeah. It would have worked on me. So then in 1987, we have the Mobura Cityman 900. It was called 900 because it used the NMT 900 network. There was a 1985 test version on the NMT 450 network called the Cityman 450. That development had some funding from the government, but also seems like it was like a test trial run with only 100 phones. And apparently only 100 phones at the time were allowed to be used in Finland because the network couldn't handle the traffic. So this 1987 Mobura Cityman 900 is the classic one. It was handheld. It didn't have the box component of the Senator or the Talkman, and it weighed 800 grams, which was very light at the time. I think it was the lightest cell phone available. It cost in today's money $5,500. But it was very popular. I know.
Whoa. Okay, it's back to my eBay Talkman.
And the battery could make about 5 calls before needing to be recharged each day, which, to be honest, isn't that much like different than my iPhone X, which loses battery very quickly. And the Cityman was really for young business people and their glamorous lifestyles. It was a status symbol. And I think it also allowed for the growth of like hustle culture, I guess, or just as cell phones in general, because these business people could now be working like from the ski slopes, from the nightclub.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also because if it was so expensive and such a status symbol, I mean, $5,500, that's insane.
Yeah, but think of all the money, all the deals you could be making that you don't make at the moment when you're out of the office.
Yeah, I guess like
it pays for itself.
I don't think you'd be able to justify it now, even like with the amount of venture. I think you'd have more possibility for business venture through phone calls more back in the day than you do now.
I mean, phones can get up to like $2,000 now.
I guess that's true, yeah.
And then also people didn't necessarily have laptops.
Yeah.
Back then. So yeah.
But so I agree with the status symbol as well, because I mean if they were that expensive and if it was such a status symbol, it's interesting because I see that technology would be kind of being tested to its limits and like testing the boundaries of where and how far this technology can go. And then I guess taking it to the ski slope or the nightclub where it's literally impossible to call anyone if that is a status symbol, you really want to test out how much it can do, or if it's so expensive, you really want to see how much it's worth.
I think there's also an element that we've seen in other episodes, particularly when we talk about like personal computers moving from business into the home, where when we started with that and with phones, there wasn't really precedent for how they would be used. And so there was a couple of years where, particularly like advertising was trying to work out how they would be integrated into our lives and the ways that they would be used. And I think that what we're seeing here is it's less about entertainment, and it's more about like, oh, how can I be, it's an extension of the office at this point. But when we look at our phones now, even though you know, through to the BlackBerry, it was very much advertised as like you can send emails and do work. But now I think a lot of people think about phones as more like personal and entertainment based than business, purely a business object. And I think that this is like the start of that, where they're trying to work out, you know, so we see the guys in their cars, and he can like call the office and he can be accessed. And that is the thing that is providing sort of the status and stuff. And the fact that you can be on the ski slopes but also be doing business and have the office contact you, for us now is kind of like a strange thing. I think most people would rather not be contacted by their office as they're skiing.
Yeah, I think we talked about this in the Coleco Adam episode actually. But yeah, it goes to show how when you take efficiency so far, you really find yourself in very bizarre situations. And I think this is like a perfect example of that.
Yeah. So it says all over the internet that the City Man features prominently in the film Lethal Weapon. But I actually looked, and I think that it's another phone by Mobira, and it's a phone called The Action Man.
No.
Which is a really short-lived Nokia Movira portable car phone that came out between the Talkman and the City Man. And I think it's interesting to kind of look at this series of naming that we have, the Action Man, the Talkman, the City Man. And we can see how this style of naming was sort of around in the 80s, particularly with something else like the Sony Walkman. So I would say Walkman, but I would say Action Man, Talkman, City Man, Action Man, Talkman. but I think that's because like the name Walkman continued on longer than the Nokia phones did, but I didn't realize it was kind of a naming relic of this era. And it reminds me of when Apple transitioned their naming, like when Steve Jobs came back to Apple, and they switched their naming from like Apple products to iProducts, with the iMac in 98, which I think technically stood for internet. But then with the popularity of the iPod, and then we started seeing that naming style seeping into the rest of society, like random companies and storefronts just putting an I in front of their names to seem modern and cool. And there's still some stuff that had, I see some stores sometimes that have an I just in front of their name, for no, like not connected to the internet. And it's sort of quite dated now. It's really of a specific era, which I think is what the Walkman Action Man thing is also doing.
Yeah, totally. And in every instance of these naming trends, though, you can see this like personification of the technology, which runs through regardless of the trend, like the I in iPhones and the man in Talkman. You can clearly see the progression as well of like gender inclusion over time, where technologies were first used for a specific gender, you know, like men doing business, and then branch out to different genders as the technology is like subverted, or the gender trends around the technology have changed or even are transposed. So yeah, the naming conventions for these things is really interesting, the like evolution of that. So it was like the Talkman, the City Man, and then the Action Man.
The Action Man. Well, it was the
Talkman. Is that the
chronology? No, it's the Talkman, the Action Man, and then the
City Man.
Yeah.
I wonder what that says. But yeah, it's so interesting.
It's also about like the individualization of it.
Yeah.
That I think that we originally, when we had, you know, computers were used by multiple people. They weren't necessarily for one person. And then this shift is really about a personal thing. It's something you carry with you. It's like only yours, whether it's in your car or it's in your pocket. It's like your personal line. versus a computer in an office that multiple people use, or a computer in like a computer room, you know.
I like that the action man came after the talkman, because it's like almost saying, you know, all action, no talk, or like
and then I think it's probably because it was slightly louder.
Yeah, I know. But it's just, you can draw some quite funny things out of it. And then the city man came after, and the city just like is, you know, all talk and all action. Like, it embodies both of those. Anyway.
Me? I'm all talk and all action. Yeah. So outside of this like lethal weapon thing, whether or not that was real or not, there was a particular incident which cemented the city man in popular culture. So there was this event in Helsinki where different Finnish manufacturers would display their goods. And Nokia had been doing this PR thing at this event over the years, where they would sort of hand one of their phones to visiting politicians at these events, which were also, they're kind of press conferences for the country. But in October 1987, the politician visiting the fair was Mikhail Gorbachev, the head of the Soviet Union and who would be their last leader. And he was one of the most famous politicians or people in the world at the time.
Yeah, and also, as we all know, a total tech freak. It was actually Khrushchev that oversaw the development of OGIS, but OGIS was happening in Russia in the 70s, which was meant to be this nationwide information network. But then Gorbachev was came after that, and he was a lot more, you know, he was like one of the most liberal Soviet leaders ever. I mean, obviously. But it's interesting because he was also very liberal in terms of technology production and networking and internationalization. So
Nokia worked with Gorbachev's people to set up a call between their phone at this fair and the Soviet Union. It was the deputy minister of communications, Vladimir Glinka, and the call itself seemed very easy, this footage of it. It's like, oh, he just picks up the phone. But in reality, they had to set up this like separate base station in the grounds of the hotel where this fair was happening, because they needed to ensure that the call would work, because they've got the world's press looking at them, and it needs to work. And it worked wonderfully. And the image and footage from this publicity stunt were widely circulated, so much so that the city man later in Finland had the nickname the Gorba phone, which is like their nickname for Gorbachev. So they named this phone.
So good. Him. The Gorba. I love it.
The Gorba. And the conversation that he had was very short. He was just sort of handed the phone, and Glinka was already connected and talking on the other side. And the things that Gorbachev said were, hello, who am I talking to? And where are you? Greetings. Then he said, I love this, is this a real call?
Yeah, that's really funny.
And then at the end, he goes, all right, see you in Moscow. And he's like joking about this, but the last comments had massive ramifications for Glinka. Apparently he was about to retire, but because Gorbachev had told him that he would meet him in Moscow, and when you watch it, it's like clear he's sort of making a joke, it's like tongue in cheek and everyone around him laughs. But that comment meant that Glinka wasn't allowed to retire just in case Gorbachev did come to Moscow to meet him. And so he ended up having to stay in government for an extra 6 months beyond the point he had planned to retire. And Gorbachev never came to see him.
No. See, and we're already seeing the ramifications of miscommunication via technology. It happened from the very start.
Oh, dear. From 1977 through 1988, the CEO of Nokia was a man named Kari Kairamo, and he had worked his way up through the paper industry. And when he joined Nokia, he really had an aggressive plan to quickly and broadly grow Nokia into an international player in multiple industries. They became very diversified. It was him that led the shift away from paper and rubber products into electronics and technology, mobile phones, televisions. And he did this through company acquisitions and partnerships. Kairamo's leadership here was also in service of the lead up to the formation of the EU in the 90s, mm-hmm. which Finland was not originally part of, like the first stage of it. And so partnerships meant that Nokia and Finland itself could still be part of these trades, because Nokia was Finland's largest company, their fortunes were incredibly interconnected.
Wow. Yeah, Nokia must have had immense political power then.
Yeah. And around this time was also kind of heading into the fall of the Soviet Union, which was one of Finland's biggest customers in terms of exports. And this was diminishing like massively and very quickly.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to ask about that, actually, because surely they were also very friendly with the Soviets. Example number one is the Gorba. So I guess, yeah, Nokia was then a very kind of shrewd double dealing business venture where like it was reaping the benefits off of, you know, its clients in the Soviet Union, in but then using that to kind of dismantle it as well and like be part of the EU and be part of the kind of Soviet fall.
I think that you can really see how powerful Nokia was at the time, particularly in the fact that they had strong business dealings with the Soviet Union, but also the United States at the same time. So they were like, but it's probably because of this way that they had these like acquisitions and partnerships, and it was sort of, and a lot of the business of Nokia isn't under the Nokia name. So they were a lot larger than they maybe appeared, because they would, when they had these partnerships and these acquisitions and subsidiaries, they would often use those company names or different company names rather than Nokia.
Yeah. So I guess like that phone call that Gorbachev had was really quite a representative moment of like the liberalization of Russia and maybe also like an overshadowing of the fall of the Soviet Union, because he wasn't just making a phone call with his partner, he was opening up the kind of network gateways to the rest of the world. And yeah, that
and
was
providing
like a pretty
validity.
Big, yeah. massive moment. Wow.
Mm-hmm. So also around this time for Nokia, there's price competition in the consumer electronics market, which is where Kairamo had put a lot of like the Nokia eggs. You know, things were getting cheaper and other companies were coming in as competition. And this really did all lead to dips in profits for Nokia, which some were attributing to Kairamo's leadership and aggressive expansion plan, though later the next CEO was, he would say that this actually was the correct move and that he had believed in it. And the reason that he was the next CEO was that in December 1988, Kairamo was 55 and he died by suicide, and Nokia tried to cover it up. They said that he had died of a sudden illness. I guess they were concerned that this would affect their investors and their stock prices, where profits are already dipping. But then word got out in the press and Nokia didn't deny it. And then they issued a statement saying that his death was unconnected with Nokia's business, though some outlets did report that a cause of his death was from work stress. And it was also said that he suffered from bipolar disorder or something similar, but I don't think this was ever confirmed. So it was a really kind of difficult time.
Yeah.
For Nokia and for Finland. And Kairamo didn't plan a successor, so there was a period of jostling for leadership, and then it settled down. But because of Kairamo's acquisitions and work on the cell phone portion of Nokia, by sort of the later 80s, Nokia had become the world's largest producer of mobile phones and held 13% of the global market. And from like 1998 through to early 2000, like 2004-ish, Nokia was the largest global seller of mobile phones. I think it had a market share of like 40% or something.
Wow. It's just so wild to me that a shocking death like that, even when it occurs in like the highest ranks of power, when it happens to literally the CEO and chairman, doesn't shake much of commerce at all. And it's just, you know, business as usual. In fact, successful business as usual.
Yeah. I mean, I think it shook it for a little period of time, but it didn't stop.
Yeah.
It's awful that that happened to Kairamo. And
yeah.
So after this sort of heyday period, there is a fall of Nokia. And some of this seems to be based on middle management issues, particularly. Apparently they stopped having meetings in boardrooms and instead opted to have meetings in saunas with vodka. And these saunas were on the roof of their office building. So they had this like incredible view. It sounds amazing.
Oh my God. It also sounds so Finnish, because they have, like, Finland has saunas in every single building.
Yeah. So. But there was also a changing market that was bringing in a lot of competition. They were launching a lot of products, like so many products. In 2004, they launched 40 products. Wow. Their US partnerships weren't particularly strong. They put a lot of energy into mobile gaming, mobile entertainment, which like not much came of in terms of profit. And also they kind of bet on a mobile operating system called Symbian, which didn't really take off like iOS and Android did, particularly in the US. So in 2011, there's talk of Nokia partnering up with Microsoft. The new CEO of Nokia, who had previously been a Microsoft executive, and there was a little like unproven conspiracy theory around that, but it's not a thing. But he gave a speech to Nokia employees that's a little famous. It's called the Burning Platform Memo, because a transcript was leaked from a Nokia internal site. The way The Guardian describes it is he likens the company's situation to that of a man standing on an oil platform in the North Sea and facing a raging fire on multiple fronts, who has no choice but to jump into freezing water to survive.
I love the drama.
It's so dramatic. We're going to read more of it on our like Patreon bonus content, but it includes great quotes like, "The battle of devices has become a war of ecosystems."
Ooh. And
"We have multiple points of scorching heat that are fueling a blazing fire around us that can produce a device much faster than the time that it takes us to polish a PowerPoint presentation."
True.
It's very dramatic. So they do end up kind of partnering up with Microsoft. And after a few years of this, in 2014, Nokia's handset cell phone business was bought by Microsoft for 7 billion euros and became Microsoft Mobile.
I smell evil.
Yeah, you're smelling correctly. Some drama is about to occur. So this could have been incredible for Microsoft. The reason they were interested was that they didn't really have a strong mobile division at this point. They had been mainly focusing on PCs and were getting pushed out of the market very quickly. But the issue that they had was that they wanted people to pay for their operating system, which we see with their computers too, like with Windows, right? Do you have to pay for Windows too? And so people had to buy the phone and then buy the software as well.
Oh, yeah. This is like a classic anti-Steve Jobs move.
And it meant that although they had all of this hardware from Nokia, they couldn't compete with Android and iOS in market share. And without market share, developers weren't so interested in creating apps, and that led to less market share.
Yeah.
And basically, two years later, they wrote off the $7.6 billion Nokia acquisition and laid off like 8,000 employees. They effectively they bought Nokia and 2 years later they closed it. And I've seen numbers for like the layoffs up to the 20,000 like over the years. And when they bought the company, it had 25,000 employees.
Basically they just pretty much got rid of almost everyone.
Yeah. I mean, not all of those employees were in Finland, but a lot of them were. And Nokia they sold it off to other companies, and it still kind of exists in small markets, but not, you know, in the global zeitgeist at all. It's not a player. There's an article in VentureBeat which says this was a corporate coupling that many observers correctly predicted would fail. Rather than being done to achieve some shared vision, at the time both Nokia and Microsoft were backed into a corner and saw the other as their only potential savior.
Yeah. I mean, I think I guess Microsoft always had the upper hand, though. Like, they always do. They're the bigger company. You know, they're like, in this case, they acted like the sort of McKinsey group of tech where you just try and cut out as many people as possible to make larger profits, or to maintain the company, I guess, in this case. I don't know. I don't really know that much about
it. I mean, it's a very monetarily expensive buy, yeah. But it's also like it affected Finland a lot, yeah. And the people. Nokia was incredibly connected to Finland and Finnish identity. It was their largest company and made a lot of products, like I said, you know, under the Nokia name, but also names of subsidiary companies. And it was a really sad day for Finland when Microsoft bought Nokia's mobile phone division, and an even sadder one when they closed it for the people, but also like it affected the economy quite a bit. Though Microsoft did establish a program to help people like get new jobs and fund some entrepreneurial activities in Finland, like they knew that they'd stuffed up.
Yeah, it's really scary because the number of layoffs is outstanding and Finland isn't even that big of a country. So I don't know, it's interesting that it had served as this very convenient political vehicle at a certain time, then created this, you know, mass accumulation of business with this post-Soviet capitalist boom. And once all of that had passed, the company sort of became redundant. So yeah, it's just wild because like you couldn't really imagine them getting any bigger because they were just so big. But even with all of that, I don't know. Like once you thought this fish couldn't get any bigger, a bigger fish comes along and eats it. And I suppose that's the, you know, the age old story of capitalism, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of, it's interesting how, you know, Microsoft was getting bigger and Nokia, when they bought them, still had a really large share of the market. And so it's sort of, it is that thing of, you know, they were kind of trying to help each other where Nokia was kind of faltering a little bit at the time and were on the burning platform. And, you know, they didn't have as strong ties to the US, and that's kind of where the market was developing. And for Microsoft, yeah, they weren't as strong in the cell phone market. But it's interesting. It's like in terms of tech, the Nokia thing is like people will remember Nokia that were around then, but they're not known now. Like I don't imagine that younger generations know really what Nokia is or who they are. And it's almost like Apple like being like folding in a couple of years and then in like 10 years, nobody really remembering.
Yeah, that is what it feels like to me because I grew up in Czech Republic and Nokia was just the standard phone everyone would have. It would be everywhere. You'd go to the Nokia store to like top up your credit. Mm-hmm. They were the telecommunication network in Czech Republic. So yeah, and now that they're not really, and obviously I had left over 15 years ago, but to go back and see that there's no more Nokia is really strange to me. Yeah, wild.
Yeah. So from an article about the purchase, this quote, Nokia, however, is such an integral part of Finnish society that it keeps on bringing out new sides to people, even those close to me. It's a subject everyone has an opinion on, possibly more than our national politics. And then with the layoffs, the Finnish finance minister said, it can be said that we have been betrayed. This is, of course, Nokia and Microsoft's trade. But when the deal was made, Microsoft announced its commitment to Finland and Finnish expertise. Now it seems that all parts of this have not been met. So it's like a little sad ending. Yeah. Kind of. I mean, Nokia, I think, like they still exist. In some of those articles, it was talking about how well, maybe with like the mobile phone section of Nokia being sold off, Nokia as a company can kind of grow in other areas. And I think it did, but it didn't maintain what it was and couldn't become what it maybe could have become.
Yeah.
I have no, it's just a little like sad ending.
Yeah. Well, it happens a lot.
We're used to sad these endings. Yeah. Every time.
Well, but thank you so much. That was awesome. We've covered, you know, the beginnings of network standards. We went from 0 to 1G to 2G, and we've also covered the kind of the takeover of capitalism for these networks and the fall of the Soviet Union. So yeah, we've done a lot, and I guess in the next episodes we'll be looking at some very different strands. But like, yeah, I think the Nokia story kind of covers quite a lot of ground.
Yeah, I think there's a TV show about it that like came out recently. I haven't watched it, but I did see some like reviews. It's a Finnish TV show, so I might watch that.
Cool.
So we're going to do a little bit of extra recording for Patreon. I want to maybe look at that burning platform speech a bit more, and also I want to talk about the snake game. Do you remember that?
Of course.
That was a Nokia game. And that's what they were, I think, when I was saying they were interested in mobile entertainment. Snake game.
Yeah. The snake game, but the other stuff that they tried didn't really stick.
So join us over on Patreon, where it'll be live by the time this podcast goes out. Also, our friend the computer on Instagram. Been doing some computer meme roundups each week, and some little I've been doing some little like green screen talks from our research. And we're also on Twitter, and also we want to thank our pals over at the Media Archaeology Lab at the University of Colorado, who are our sister, we're a sister project of theirs, and they give us some support, and we're very grateful to be connected with them. They're awesome. Oh yeah, wait, and will this have, we're curating their next ephemeral. So if you head over to our Instagram
or even website,
we have an open call for artwork and writing submissions, and I think that closes October 1st.
Subscribe to our podcast on all platforms and like our things, and stay tuned for the next one.
Yay, season 3.
Woo!
Thanks, Anna. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.